Hello, it's Wednesday, April 26th, and you're listening to Wing Radio. I'm Lisa Giuliani.
And I'm Victor Thorne. Welcome to Wing Radio, which can be found at www.wingtv.net. Well, yesterday's show we said we were going to talk about Iran today, and we're going to get to that in a few minutes. But first of all, the big news today, something that a lot of people have been suspecting for quite a while, is that Tony Snow is going to replace Scott McClellan as George Bush's latest press secretary.
And it looks like our worst fears are confirmed. Tony Snow will be replacing Scott McClellan. So I guess we can say that Rupert Murdoch has now taken over the White House.
That's right. And if you look on the Wing TV homepage, there's an article called Tony Snow, Latest Mouthpiece. And what I say in this article, and I think it's very interesting, Lisa, is that when the founding fathers formed this nation, one of the central tenets they had was that there was a separation of church and state, right?
Right.
But we see how much George Bush has catered to the religious right, and the religious right is an amen corner, of course, for the nation of Israel. So they pretty much trampled upon that precept. Also, you would think there should be a division between the government and big business. But if you see how much George Bush and his cronies are in with big oil, and also the defense contractors, that basically what we have is the very epitome of fascism. And that's what fascism means, the merging of state and corporations.
There should also be a division between the government and the media.
Right. And that's the final point, is that even though the CIA-controlled mass media has always been a mouthpiece for the plutocrats in D.C., and this is both on the left and the right, you know, this isn't a Democrat or Republican issue, they've now taken it to the next step when they hired Tony Snow, who at one time worked for the Washington Times. He also was a columnist for USA Today.
And he was a speechwriter for the George Bush Sr. administration.
Right, and lately he's been under the employ of Rupert Murdoch, mm-hmm, on both TV and radio.
Right.
So you have this merging now of government and corporate media. So all in all, you have in bed together the government, the religious right, Israel, big business, big oil, the defense contractors, corporate media, and on.
Let's throw in a secret society there, too, because Tony Snow is also a member of the Council on Foreign Relations.
Mm-hmm.
So envision the implications of that. Tony Snow, Fox News shill. He's going to be a face of the White House. He's a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. I mean, does it spell out disaster for you?
Yeah. And, you know, I was listening to Frank Whelan's show yesterday morning, and right towards the tail end of it, he was talking to a caller, and he was commenting on Tony Snow about his radio show, and he said how Tony Snow doesn't handle negative callers into a show very well. He either dismisses them real quickly or hangs up on them, or he's rude to them. And he was saying, well, if he can't even handle callers into a show, how's he going to react as press secretary? Now, we all know that the only people allowed into these press conferences are when Tony Snow or Scott McClellan is present, are people with official media passes, not the kind that Jack Blood's giving away. Or selling, I should say.
Well, one of the, I guess, conditions, or two of the conditions upon his accepting this position, he wanted to be reassured that he would have active role in policy debates and discussions, and also he wanted to be involved in the hiring of the press.
Which I don't even know what that means. But
only the people that are that he likes are going to get in there.
Right. And it's kind of funny to say that he wants to be a part of the policy-making decisions. Well, I doubt that's going to happen, but I think what he's saying is, vis-a-vis, is that he doesn't want to be put in the same position as Scott McClellan, who's going out there after Dick Cheney had his Elmer Fudd shooting incident, and he's lying and lying and lying, and just one lie on top of another lie to cover Dick Cheney's butt. And the same with the WMDs and this spy scandal and the leaks and everything. Tony Snow was basically saying, nobody wants this stinking job, but I'll do it for you, but you just can't put me in this position. Well, we'll see about that because
that way he'll also be able to convey Rupert Murdoch's memo of the day
really?
To the White House administration
directly. We'll have to see how this goes as the Bush sinking ship
really
gets even worse and worse. Also, Lisa, Karl Rove is going to be brought in front of a grand jury for the fifth time now. The fifth time. And I guess what Rove, how he's spinning this time is that when they were asking him before about his reporter contacts, he seems to have forgotten a few of them. Conveniently forgotten a few of these reporter contacts.
Interesting.
So they're going to bring him in and, and ask him about these latest ones that he forgot about. And God only knows where this is going.
I don't recall.
Yeah, yeah. So
I have no recollection.
It's funny how he has such a great memory, except for when it conveniently fails him. So we'll see what develops out of this.
Hillary.
Yeah, exactly. One last thing on my end here is I was driving home this afternoon, and I was listening to Bill O'Reilly on the radio, and he was talking about Tony Snow. And he was also talking about the far left and the liberal media and how they're all ideologues and how they have this agenda, blah, blah, blah. And then he said one thing that I had to scratch down immediately when he said it. Bill O'Reilly said, no person at Fox News toes any kind of ideological line at all. I guarantee that.
Fair and balanced BS.
Can you believe those words even come out of his mouth?
Do you think he believes his own BS?
You know, he might be such a lunatic that he might at this stage. But, I mean, to say that nobody at Fox has any kind of ideological bent to them is so far beyond the pale of reality that it's unbelievable that the words can even come out of his mouth.
I don't know what he's going to say next. Condi Rice apparently clashed or caused clashes in Greece. She visited Athens to meet with the Greek prime minister before heading to Ankara, Turkey. Anti-war protesters appeared there. They clashed with riot police in Athens during her visit. They tried to reach the building where Rice and the prime minister were meeting, but they were many of them retreated under police pressure. One protester, who was a school teacher, told Reuters, "We're not protesting just against Rice, but the imperialist, warmongering U.S. government. The U.S. war in Iraq has triggered very strong opposition in Greece. They are also opposed to the war in Afghanistan." You see, the whole world is against this war, except for Israel and the United States.
Well, and even then, when you look at the United States, only a very small percentage is for this
United
war.
United States government.
Yeah. I mean, even in the government, just a small percentage. It keeps getting less and less, yet the drumbeat for a new war seems to keep getting louder and louder every day. And that's really the focus of our show today is, will there be an invasion of Iran in the near future? And there was a good article on Lou Rockwell's site. It was written by a guy named Chris Floyd. And he was saying 12 hours. Well, what does 12 hours mean? He says 12 hours is all it would take. That's the maximum time necessary for American bombers to gear up, get up into the air, and launch an unprovoked sneak attack. So, really, if you went to bed one night, in all reality, you could wake up the next morning, turn on the radio or the TV, and we could have already have attacked Iran. So this isn't a big window if we set our sights on doing it. And he said that there would be no warning, no declaration of war, no hearings, no public debate. Simply, if the go is given, 12 hours max, and we could be dropping nukes over Tehran.
Yeah. In a recent article in the New Yorker magazine, veteran journalist Seymour Hersh wrote that Bush's administration has increased clandestine activities inside of Iran and intensified planning for a possible major air attack as the crisis with Iran escalates. He wrote that teams of American combat troops have been ordered into Iran undercover to collect targeting data to establish contact with anti-government ethnic minority groups. And there's been a marked spike in unrest in Kurdistan, Khuzestan, and Balochistan, three provinces of Iran with a high concentration of Kurdish, Arab, and Balochi minorities.
Right. They're hooking up with a group called MEK.
Right.
And this is kind of like the same sort of group that they hooked up with Iraq and so forth. This is their modus operandi to get people on the inside. But if we did launch one of these attacks, if we did go all the way for the big one, for the nukes, what would happen? Well, in this article by Chris Floyd, he's saying, within 2 weeks of us dropping a bomb, 3 million people would be killed by radiation alone. 3 million. And he said that approximately 35 million people would be exposed to very dangerous levels of radiation. These would be people in Afghanistan, Pakistan, India, and other surrounding nations, Iraq, and so forth. So we're not talking about some little figures here. This is the real thing.
Yeah.
And it's much above what happened in Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Supposedly the Iranian government knows that it's been infiltrated and is aware, you know, identified these infiltrators, but isn't showing this publicly. And the president hasn't notified the Congress that American troops are operating inside of Iran, according to a retired U.S. Army colonel named Sam Gardner. This new mission for combat troops is a product of Rumsfeld's longstanding interest in expanding the role, and not just Rumsfeld, it's PNAC too.
Right.
Expanding the role of the military in covert operations, because, see, these operations, if they're conducted by CIA ops, they would need a presidential finding and would have to be reported to key members of Congress.
Right. So if they use groups like MEK and so forth, they can still do it clandestinely. And this isn't anything new. This is business as usual, of course. But another factor that has to be weighed into this whole scenario is Israel.
Right.
And they got a high-level official named Moshe Katsav, who's coming out and he's saying that the free world, that means everybody, I guess, can't stay idle in the face of this certain destruction of Israel if Iran gets nuclear weapons. And he says that we can't have any ambiguity about this, that we have to be very much in their face about it right now, because if we let them progress any further, then Israel is in grave danger of being obliterated.
Iran's defense minister said this. He said, given all intelligence information that we have gathered, we can say that agents of the U.S., Britain, and Israel are seeking to destabilize Iran through a coordinated plan.
Right.
Israel's totally involved in it.
Yeah, plus, we can never forget that Israel has at least 200 nuclear warheads. They're the only country in the Middle East that's equipped with nukes. And we get into a situation where if we go back 25 years to 1981, Israel bombed Iraq's nuclear reactor in a town called Osirak. So this isn't something that Israel hasn't done before. And I think the common knowledge right now in political circles is that if the United States doesn't do something within a certain window of time, Israel's going to. They're going to take it upon themselves to do it.
The former Iranian ambassador says, in the event the U.S. keeps pressuring Iran, the end of the tunnel for President Ahmadinejad, I can't say the guy's name, administration is weaponization of the nuclear technology and a military strike. He says, the Americans are pushing Iran to become a nuclear state. Iran just wants to be a supplier of nuclear fuel, but with their threats, they're pushing it further.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, if we go back a few years before our invasion of Iraq, this was the current invasion, not George Bush Sr.'s, Saddam Hussein would come out and say that if America attacks Iraq, that they're not going to come in there and just roll over them, that it's going to be a battle that they never thought they were going to get themselves into. And everyone thought, oh, Saddam Hussein, like, we can't wipe the floor with him, you know? And everyone laughed at him and thought he was crazy. Well, we went into Iraq. A few months later, we have George Bush behind the big sign that says, mission accomplished. But guess what? It's 3+ years later, and guess what? Have we wiped the floor with Iraq?
No.
Absolutely not. So, Iran's defense ministers on Monday said that if we invade Iran, that the United States is going to suffer a humiliating defeat. Now, if it wasn't for what Saddam said earlier and how right he was proven, maybe people wouldn't take this as seriously, but I take it very seriously because we're in for a bloodbath. if we go in there.
Right. According to Seymour Hersh again, U.S. combat troops are already inside Iran and in the event of airstrikes would be in position to mark critical targets with laser beams to ensure bombing accuracy and excite sectarian tensions between the population and the central government.
Yeah.
So they're already in there.
Yeah. And you know what this defense minister is also reminding America of? How about 1979 when Jimmy Carter was president? Or maybe this was 1979. Do you remember when they kidnapped our people from the embassy?
Uh-huh.
And they held them for over a year, I believe. Well, Jimmy Carter finally had to make a decision. He sent some helicopters in there. Well, the helicopters ended up crashing because there was a sandstorm in the Tabas Desert. So the defense minister is saying that if America chooses the military option, that their defeat is going to be even more humiliating than their failure in the Tabas Desert. And so now we have Saddam Hussein plus this failure in 1979. And is anybody considering any of these past things? Because history has a way of repeating itself.
Another interesting aspect to this is how some Jewish leaders are now warning of a possible backlash against the State of Israel and Jews overall if there is any possible military strike against Iran. These people are saying that Bush's repeated and sometimes exclusive focus on citing Israel as his top rationale for a possible U.S. military conflict with Iran, it could have a backlash that might injure the Jewish community. They say it could spark public fury against Israel and Jews if U.S. military action is accompanied by skyrocketing gas prices, terrorism at home, or dead American soldiers who might be seen as dying for Israel rather than dying for America.
Right.
That's a good point.
Well, and it seems like the entire world knows, except for the United States, except for the brain-dead people here that are still following blindly behind President Bush. But everybody knows that Iraq was a war for Israel. And they also know that Iran, if we invade, is going to be a war for Israel. And I'm glad you brought up one of those points about gas prices, because if we do go in there and have any kind of military strike, whether it's nukes or just a regular attack like we have in Iraq, first of all, what's going to happen is that Iran's going to shut off their oil supply, which is going to make prices skyrocket. Plus, what if they go in there and wreak havoc in the Persian Gulf or in the Strait of Hormuz, and none of the oil that comes out of there is able to make it to the rest of the world? We're talking about $100 a barrel of oil minimum. It's going to send the whole world into chaos.
Yeah, Bush has repeatedly taken note of the threat a nuclear Iran would pose to Israel. On some occasions, Bush has offered this as his sole rationale for confronting Iran. Other U.S. leaders have suggested strong U.S. military action might be necessary to keep Israel from acting against Iran on its own. There are concerns, according to Dick Cheney in February 2005, he said that Israel may attack Iran without being asked. A Democrat from Queens, New York, Gary Ackerman, says Bush's focus increases the likelihood of a backlash against Jews in Israel if a U.S.-led war on Iran turns sour. He said, it's a horrible thing to do. It's dangerous. If something goes wrong, it's a setup to say we did it for Israel and not for America and to blame the Jews. Now, this isn't, the first time that Bush has said things like this. Bush has repeatedly referred to Israel being threatened by Iran. And so we can't de-emphasize the role that Israel plays in this.
Right, right. And there was an article, and I don't have it with me right now, but if you do a search on the Internet, you'll be able to find it. But I guess Iran has these new missiles that they got from Russia that are virtually unavoidable on attack against American ships. So we don't have a defense against them. And even though Russia's military isn't nearly as mighty as ours is, they've developed these less expensive torpedoes and missiles and so forth that we can't defend against in the Persian Gulf. So that's just another element to the equation that everybody has to consider, because this isn't going to be a cakewalk by any means. And there's another writer, Eric Margolis, who is saying that if we go into Iran, that's not the end of it. If we go there, then the whole stack, then the whole line of dominoes begins to fall. Then there's Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, and so forth, Libya, Syria. And does anybody in their right mind want this kind of World War III? I mean, this would be officially World War III.
Right. According to an Iranian newspaper, April 9th, Iran said it shot down an unmanned surveillance plane in the province of Khuzestan. According to that one report, the U.S. media also reported that the U.S. military has been secretly flying surveillance drones over Iran since 2004, using radar, video, still photography, and air filters to monitor the Iranian military formations and track Iran's air defense system. So we've been watching them for a long time. There's no reason to believe they wouldn't already be in there.
Right. And when you really look at the big picture, this isn't the first time that the nuclear option has been on the table. It's been there before.
What about Israel's nuclear option?
Right. Well, and luckily, though, there's been sane minds that have taken command and not pushed for the final pushing of this button for the nuclear option. But now we have the crazies of the crazies in the White House, and they're representative of the people at the top of the control pyramid, because if they weren't, George Bush wouldn't have been selected for a second term.
I think they should be very cognizant of the potential for a backlash, though. If we do go in there and strike Iran, you know, and the American public perceives that it has to do with Israel, if Bush keeps repeating this, you know, he's going to make Israel the target.
Yeah, but the thing is that when we talk about a backlash, once you start dropping nukes, that's enough of a backlash right there.
Absolutely.
Because this radiation isn't going to simply stay in Iran. I mean, we even know this from when there's dust storms in China, and it gets into the global currents, and it comes up.
Right.
And
why do we need to wait for the dropping of a nuke before we see where it's heading, who's instigating it, who's stirring the pot, and what roles these different countries are playing?
Right, but this stuff in China ends up affecting the weather in America. So does anybody think that if we drop nukes in Iran, that somehow we're going to be removed from it and stay in our little cocoon here? Well, absolutely not. And once one nation starts dropping them, look at how many other nations possess them: India, Pakistan, Russia, China. And if they say, well, you know, all bets are off now.
The gloves are off.
Yeah, the
I mean, what stops anyone else from pushing the button after it's all pushed the first time? And we all share the same planet. We share the same atmosphere. Yeah. We share the same air.
And if anybody out there thinks, well, these lunatics, these people like Cheney and Rumsfeld, these people that are akin to Caligula back in the olden days, if they're not able, or if they think they're not able to do something like this, Lisa, go back 4.5 years to 9/11.
Right.
They're crazy enough to do that.
They're crazy enough to do anything.
Yeah, they really are.
And, you know, we just urge you to read some of these articles that are out there about the upcoming possible Iran strike, about China. Get yourself all familiar with the stuff that's being said about what's going on with our intelligence operations. You need to know who the players are. And keep your eyes on Tony Snow.
Right, and once you bring Venezuela into it, and Hugo Chavez, we're right now in as dangerous a time as after Germany.
A global catastrophe.
Right. I mean, after Germany invaded Poland, I think we're at the same right now turning point. And every time another domino is knocked over, it gets closer and closer to this global maelstrom. So
yeah, it's not looking good, that's for sure. It's looking pretty abysmal.
Yeah, it's a dangerous time, and everybody, you know, it's do or die right now, I think. It really is. And we have Iran on one side, and they keep ratcheting up the rhetoric.
Mm-hmm.
Israel on the other side with their threats and ultimatums. And once again, we're in the middle doing the dirty work.
Right. And now we have the new face of Tony Snow to put the new Fox spin, the Rupert Murdoch spin on what we get to hear. Well, I thought the news was filtered before. I can just imagine what's going to happen now.
Right, and behind him, then you have, of course, the Council on Foreign Relations, which he's a member of. So, and he's not the only broadcaster, of course, in that elite little club.
So much for the separation of government and media. So much for the media being the watchdog.
Exactly.
The lapdog, for sure, now.
Yeah. Well, folks, tomorrow we're going to have Visigoth on this show. He's a host of the radio show called From the Grassy Knoll. We're going to talk about the upcoming movie, The Da Vinci Code, Opus D, V for Vendetta, and whatever else. I'm sure the Vatican will sneak its way in there. And it's, I think, promises to be a very interesting show.
Right.
Because whenever this subject is broached, there seems like a lot of controversy surrounds it, especially from those who think that it's Catholic bashing. But, you know, Lisa?
We love talking to Viz, too. It's always fun to have around.
But, you know, whenever we talk about Israel, it's like we're the Jew bashers. Or if you talk about any of these other elements, what it boils down to is, what are we allowed to talk about? Do we want a free media where anything is allowed to be on the table? Or do you want the alternative media to become like the mainstream media where all these certain topics aren't allowed to be discussed?
Yeah, it's going to get to the point we're not allowed to talk about anything. Sorry, we have no sacred cows.
Exactly. You know, we get bored talking about the weather. So tune in tomorrow. Talk to Visigoth. Until then, keep your eyes open because there's a lot going on.
See you all then.